welcome to episode number 10 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about the respiratory portion of the lungs, what's in my backpack, and I finished what I was trying to say about embryo from last week. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Micah. How's it going?
I feel like you start out every episode with, hey, Micah.
I know. How's it going? I do. But I thought I would, like, be crazy.
And make me start and say, she just stared at me once we hit record. Yeah, right.
Batting my eyes and giving you a creepy look.
Yeah, it was much more, yeah.
Like sci-fi batting, villains.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Like sci-fi villains?
Yes, Micah.
Oh.
Like if I've gotten like
sort of Stepford Wife in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have nothing new or interesting to say other than I'd really like to finish what I was trying to talk about. Like, I feel like both of my sections are stuff I was trying to talk about, like, what I didn't get to cover
last
week.
This is almost like part twos.
Right. It's a part two episode.
Yeah. Oh. Do we need to give, like, people, like, a teaser?
I feel like that's
from the week before or whatever.
Oh, okay. Well,
like, I'm just thinking about, like, part two episodes on television.
Oh, last week.
Yeah.
On the Art of Med School.
Yes.
Yep. Well, last week on the Art of Med School, I'll just tease the first section. Because that's what we're going to talk about. So the last week we talked about the conduction portion of the lungs, which was essentially, or not just the lungs, but the whole airway, the respiratory system. Their job is to bring air down to the lungs where we can do gas exchange. Right?
Sure.
Okay. So we talked about going through the nose and how it goes to the nasal pharynx, to the pharynx, to the larynx, to the different types of bronchioles that we have. We talked about warming it up and filtering it and having mucus and cilia on the cells to try and push all that extra gunk out. And then we finally got to the terminal bronchioles, which is the very last step in the conduction system, or the conduction portion of the lungs. And so those were the ones that had, they had smooth muscle around it for constriction and dilation. Their diameter is half a millimeter or less, so we're talking very, very small. And they're so small that they have club cells that secrete surfactant, which that surfactant was a material. It's kind of like a soap in a way, and it reduces surface tension.
Oh, sure, yeah. That's a good way to think about it, as a soap.
Soap.
Yeah.
How does that help? Like, what makes you think that's a good way to think about it?
I don't know. It makes things slippery and start sticky. I don't know.
Yeah, that works. And then so it helps prevent collapse, and it can metabolize airborne toxins. We talked about how they have a lot of smooth endoplasmic reticulum whose job is to metabolize toxins, essentially. You know what else has a ton of smooth endoplasmic reticulum in their cells? Your liver.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that makes sense, right? Like, why it would have, because if its job is to, the liver's job is to clean out your blood, basically. It's where you send all your alcohol.
Yeah, that, yeah.
And so those cells should have a lot of smooth endoplasmic reticulum.
I think mine are probably all hard.
Hard endoplasmic reticulum?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Okay, so let's talk about the respiratory portion, which is where gas exchange happens. And gas exchange is, like, actually really, really complex. And also not complex at the same time. Like, we can boil this down.
Oh, like the Asian game Go?
I've never played.
Simple to learn, but impossible, like, to master.
Like, I thought that was dating. Okay, so it starts with the terminal bronchioles, or it starts after the terminal bronchioles, rather. And it begins with the respiratory bronchioles. And the respiratory bronchioles no longer have that, like, ciliated stuff. You know, we really can't kick stuff back anymore. And that's why, like, those club cells are so important. So they have simple cuboidal epithelium, which are, so all the lining of them are like little cubes around the respiratory bronchioles, or like along the walls. And they also have club cells to secrete surfactant and stuff. And there's like openings to alveoli from there. And,
oh, yeah. I remember from, like, elementary school that alveoli looked like bunches of grapes.
Yeah, yeah. And it, like, in between, connects all those bunches of grapes, or connect the respiratory bronchioles to the bunches of grapes, are the alveolar ducts. And so it's just like a little respiratory pathway. And this is the last part to have smooth muscle. So we only have smooth muscle in just a few different sections. And they're lined with pneumocytes. Pneumocytes secrete the surfactant. And this is where it's really, really important, because we're so small at this point that it's really easy for those edges, those pieces of paper that we talked about being wet, for them to touch, because it's not very far away from each other.
Sure.
So it's really important that we have good lining here. Otherwise, our whole lung can collapse. And those are created by type 2 pneumocytes. And, you know, we talk about, oh, shoot, now it's going to escape me. Is it week 28? Yeah, the baby needs to be at least 28
weeks
old.
Oh, yeah, yeah, something like that.
Okay, I don't have that exact week in my head right now. But we talk about how it needs to be at least week, it might be 24. Whatever week, that it needs to be at least X amount of weeks long, 20-something. Before we know that it can survive outside of the womb. And what we're actually talking about is when it starts making type 2 pneumocytes.
Oh.
Because because
then otherwise the lungs will stick and they won't be able to respirate.
Right. And so they will just die. There'll be respiratory distress syndrome. And their lungs essentially collapse on themselves. And there's really not a lot you can do about that. Other than try and ventilate them or something and try and keep them going until their body actually makes those. So like they're super, super important. And then we have the type 2, and then we have type 1, which kind of look like the squamous cells that we talked about, but they're really, really thin and really, really stretched out. And type 1, we actually have more type 2, but type 1 makes up something like 90% of the physical space, like the volume of our alveoli. And so the reason they're so stretched out is because that's where we have gas exchange happening. Type 1 is responsible for letting the right stuff through.
The right stuff.
Yeah.
Baby.
The right stuff.
Can I get to you, girl?
So that'd be like... So it'd be oxygen and carbon dioxide. And basically, oxygen and carbon dioxide, you can really pretty much think of as simple diffusion or like osmosis. So it's the whole idea of when you have a lot of something on one side, but not a lot of it on the other.
Yeah, adverse like pressure sort of or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, so if you have a lot of oxygen on one side and not so much on the other side of that barrier, it's going to naturally want to push through.
Go over, yeah.
Yep. So that's what's happening when we're putting poorly oxygenated blood into the lungs. It's because there's more oxygen in the lungs that it wants to go through and meet up.
Oh.
Yeah. Similarly, when we do carbon dioxide.
Yeah, because the main job is to get carbon dioxide out of the body.
Yep.
Not to get oxygen in.
Yeah. So the same thing, that we have less carbon dioxide in our lungs than in our blood, and so the carbon dioxide that gets transferred past gets
smooshed out.
And like, it's interesting if you're into this, it's not interesting if you're not into this, but there's a ton of math of like figuring out the partial pressures of normal room oxygen, of the different, you know, nitrogen and oxygen, carbon dioxide, and all the different elements in our air, and yeah, blah, 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 the pressures of your lungs versus room pressure. Yeah, you're already looking at me like you don't care.
No, well, the only thing that I find interesting about that is, you know, thinking about being able to make that system more efficient while I'm snorkeling.
That's fair. I mean, the math of it is very, very interesting. It's also kind of complex. But to, like, kind of sum up what I think is, like, the most cool thing about the math of it is how the idea that your expiration is passive. Like, you have to work to make your lung, your thoracic cavity bigger, which essentially sucks air into your lungs. But if you just relax, air will naturally escape you because it's higher pressure in your lungs than it is outside of your body.
I'm totally thinking about this as I'm breathing right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty neat. For lungs, it's the same, or for snorkeling, it's the same. You can apply this where if you have too much air in your lungs as you start to dive, one, you're going to have a higher like pressure ratio difference because you go deeper and it's a little bit harder on your body. You actually end up using more oxygen. But also as you expand and you're holding all those muscles tight to hold all that extra air, you're actually burning more oxygen than if you didn't need to.
Oh, sure.
So that's why, like,
so you don't take a big breath.
No. They say take like 80% capacity is all you really need. And again, same thing that you were saying before. The reason that you run out of breath when you're snorkeling, and you feel like you need to go back up, it's not because you need more oxygen. It's because you need more carbon dioxide
to leave.
That you need carbon dioxide to leave. So what do you need to bring in more oxygen for, or so much oxygen when you take a giant breath?
Oh, sure, yeah.
You're not using it anyhow.
Yeah. All right. Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. All right, Micah. So just in keeping with the spirit of the extension from last week, last week we talked about different ways that we make money. I think that it would be a little remiss if I didn't plug Patreon one more time.
Right. Yeah.
So making sure that is another way that we're able to stay here, stay in med school, and keep this podcast happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ton of fun for us to bring all this content. And we actually have some really cool ideas that we would like to add as far as content goes that I won't. Let's not say anything here now. Let's make them unlock it. You know, right? But so whatever kind of help that we can get would be awesome, so that we can keep providing content. And hopefully, you know, you're enjoying this and having as much fun as we are.
So yeah, that is just the continuation portion from last week. But I do have a brand new topic.
Oh, okay.
All right. So do you know what I keep in my purse?
I really, really feel like there's a testicle joke coming up here.
There's not.
Was there if I hadn't said that I felt like there was one?
Absolutely. Okay. 100%. I was thinking about the things that I pack in my purse every day, and the things that you pack in your bag every day might be helpful, or at least interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So beyond a lot of trash that I keep in the bottom of my purse.
A lot. Yeah. I dare to look.
I have mixed feelings about this, but I do keep hand sanitizer in my purse.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I understand the mixed feeling part.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't use it as much as people randomly ask me if I have any.
Really?
Yeah. And so I've definitely given out more than I've ever used.
Huh.
Yeah. I also keep a little thing of hand lotion.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Not so much to, it's not like sunscreen or anything, but every so often, I do get parched. Right. I always have an SPF chapstick in there. And what I've noticed is that I always have to keep a water bottle with me.
Yeah. That is definitely something that I feel like we've both really developed that habit after we got done with Caribbean.
Yeah. And in my wallet, beyond like my U.S. driver's license and, you know, my debit card and cash, because I always have to carry cash here.
Yep.
Because most places don't take credit cards. I carry my Vincentian tax identification number.
Yep.
Because most people will want that if I get like pulled over or lost or whatever, they need that number for some reason. It's like having your driver's license number.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I keep my temporary Vincentian driver's license.
Right.
And it's just like a flimsy little piece of paper, but that definitely looks like you could photocopy it and it wouldn't be a big deal.
But it's also handwritten on.
Yeah. So, but anytime I'm driving, of course, I keep my hypertension license. Yep. You know, just in case.
Mm-hmm.
What all, I mean, and that's just kind of basic, everyday sort of stuff. What do you have in your school bag?
Well, obviously, I've got the obvious stuff of, you know, pens. I also have pencils.
Mm-hmm.
I actually...
Do you use those?
Yeah, actually I do, because I do a lot of question banks, like from digital books.
Sure.
And so, you know, writing that way. Or if I make notes to myself that sometimes for me, writing something is more important than, or more helpful than typing it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a lot of drawing that you do in med school where you draw the brachial plexus.
Oh.
Or you sketch out the blood flow of the abdomen, you know, and you can't really do that online.
Yeah.
Or on the computer. So stuff like that. So I just have a notebook in there. I carry my first aid book, but to be honest, I haven't really used my first aid book much yet. It's first aid is kind of considered the Bible for med school, and it's first aid is like a study guide,
like the general manual.
Yeah,
essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but from what I understand, it's too early in my school to or in my schooling to really be using it. But as far as like kind of the weird random stuff that I carry. I always carry a few flash drives with me because a lot of us do our best to share resources. Like, I just got a 1.6 gig document. Gig.
Wow.
Word document. Right?
How many? Like, that's like 40,000 pages or something.
It was a ton of photos in it.
Oh, photos.
Yeah, but it was this guy's notes from the entire... And just one block of his, this last block of histology.
Wow.
Yeah, he put a ton of work into it. So, but flash drives or stuff like that. I actually carry a power strip with me, which I've never used yet because the school is pretty good about having a lot of U.S. ports for plugging in. But I was told it'd be a good one to carry with. I haven't used it yet. I'll probably end up taking it out. I also carry, like, toothbrush, toothpaste, just in case, underarm deodorant. There's been a few times here where, I don't know if it's the weather or what, but my arthritis has gotten pretty bad. So I always carry painkiller with me. And then extra phone charger, and that's about it.
And your umbrella.
Oh, yeah, my umbrella. That's true.
It's all strapped on the outside. That's why I always think of it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't carry a water bottle with me like you do, but because I was strapping the water bottle to my bag, but it would, like, all flop around, and people were getting really annoyed with me on the dollar van. So I fell out of that habit, and what I've been doing is...
Now you don't really ride the van that much anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter that much.
But at night, I fill, like, an old pop bottle with water, throw it in the freezer, and then put that in my lunch bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then it keeps my food cold, and by the time that I'm having lunch, it's melted enough that I can drink the water.
Nice and cold.
Yeah.
And do you bring a laptop or a tablet with you?
I bring a laptop. I have a tablet here, but I do a lot of stuff online, and I feel like sometimes a computer is just easier to... It's still just more versatile than a tablet.
Yeah.
However, I'll, like, when I went to the health fair, I was doing blood pressures at a health fair recently, I downloaded, like, 4 or 5 PowerPoint presentations, like, 4 or 5 lectures that I wanted to study, and I threw it on my tablet, and then I could just pull my tablet out in between patients and run through stuff like that. So, like, the tablet has been still really helpful. It's just more of a, like, on-the-go type thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's what we're packing. Hey, we launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
So this is the second time that we've started this section, but Jen made such a terrible joke.
It was awful that I didn't even think it was funny. And I'm so good at laughing at my own jokes.
She actually deleted it of her own accord.
Yeah. And you'll never know what it's about unless you subscribe to us on Patreon and ask us a question, and I will answer it.
That's true.
Boom.
That's true. All right. So I feel like we started talking about embryology and why it's important last week.
Yes.
And I didn't really feel like I fully fleshed out, pun included. I didn't think of that until I said it. And if you think that joke was bad, you should have heard the one that she made before we did. Anyway, I didn't really finish what, you know, there was just a few things that I wanted to add on, and so we're going to add them on here. We talked about this idea how all of our different body parts have to come from somewhere when we're a fetus or we're an embryo, right?
Yes.
And how all those things are then related. So we talked about, like, the posterior compartment of the thigh, all those muscles that are in that posterior compartment, so basically just the back of your thigh, they all basically do the same thing. They are fed by the same blood supply and innervated by the same nerve because they all come from the same place embryologically.
Right.
And how much easier that can be or how much easier it can be to understand the human body when you kind of get an idea of that. So what I wanted to add was the tongue, which I think is a really interesting example of this, because the tongue itself comes from multiple places when you're being developed.
Why?
I don't actually have a good answer for that. Why it comes from multiple places. It
just does.
Yeah, it has weird movement.
It has really awesome movement.
It has weird sensation
like
things.
There's, like, I don't know, I can't think of a muscle I can move around like my tongue.
No, you can. Like, because, like, you know, muscles, all they can do is contract, so that means all they can do is pull. So the amount of muscle that you have to have in your tongue in order for it to be able to pull in all those different directions.
Yeah, we're totally doing it right now.
Yeah, no, it's totally weird. I mean, even think about, like, what muscle or where would that muscle be that allows you to push your tongue out? If all a muscle can do is contract, what muscle is contracting that helps you push your tongue out?
I don't know.
I don't either. Like, it's that, like, oddly complex, you know? Because it comes from multiple origins, what's really interesting about the tongue is that it's actually stimulated by multiple nerves.
Mm.
Because you have different tissue come from different places, so different nerves have to, like, kind of travel with it. So the anterior or the front portion of your tongue, the front two-thirds of your tongue, that sensation is done by cranial nerve 5.
I'm spending so much of this episode just thinking, like, about my own tongue. Like, that's why I'm not talking.
So cranial nerve 5, the trigeminal nerve, that does the anterior portion, two-thirds of your tongue. But that's just the sensation of it. And by sensation, I don't mean special sense of sensation. That's not the taste buds. Because the taste buds, the anterior two-thirds of your tongue, is actually done by cranial nerve 8, which is the glossopharyngeal nerve. So,
okay.
So same part of your tongue, two different types of sensations.
Yeah, like if I bite nerves. The tip of my tongue, it's innervated by a different place than when I put my tongue in my coffee.
Yeah. And then the posterior third, the sensation and the sensory come from cranial nerve 9.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so it's not
like a whole other area. Oh, and I'm sorry, I misspoke. I knew that didn't sound right. 9 is glossopharyngeal. Sensory sensation of anterior two-thirds of the tongue is actually your facial nerve.
Huh. What,
you didn't know there was a facial nerve?
No, I did. I was just making a facial expression.
Yeah. So, and most people I know don't care about that little misspeak, but in case anybody's listening for school, I want to make sure that I'm saying it right. Anyway, so now your muscles of your tongue come from a whole nother origin.
Okay.
And so those muscles are innervated by cranial nerve 12, which is the hypoglossal nerve. So you can see, like, how when things come from multiple places, how quickly it can get much more complex. You know, and so understanding where those things came from help us to understand why they go together like they do, you know. Sagan sort of instructs our understanding of the body.
Yeah. Like, so, because what you're saying, on the other hand, is that all of the muscles on the back of your leg all come from the same place, and all the things on your tongue come from, like, multiple different places.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's wild.
Yeah, it is. And, like, and so we, and actually, I think we'll do a bonus episode on Treacher Collins, because I think Treacher Collins is interesting. However, so Treacher Collins is a syndrome that you're born with, and I won't go too in-depth, but basically there's a miscoding in your genes, and this can happen without familial history. This can be just a sporadic miscode. Actually, 60% of people who have Treacher Collins have this sporadic miscoding. But it's
that's more than half.
Yeah. So pharyngeal arch 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the pharyngeal arches being responsible for developing two parts of your face and your neck. They have this miscoding, this gene that causes them to die earlier, the cells to die. Because, like, cells naturally die. That's
sure. Yeah, that's
apoptosis. But so they die extra fast. And because they die extra fast, they aren't able to migrate to where they need to go to become the parts of your face that they're responsible for.
Oh.
Okay. So this is pharyngeal arch 1 and 2. If we know what is involved with pharyngeal arch 1 and 2, we know that that's going to be a problem for anybody with Treacher Collins. So
Sure.
So the you have hypoplasias. It does not fully develop like mandible and maxilla because that comes from pharyngeal arch 1. The inner and the outer ear comes from pouch 1. Pouch 2, which is like the spots between the arches, is external ear. So they have tons of ear problems and often not developed. The eye and the orbital sockets, like below the eye, that area, that's underdeveloped because that comes from pharyngeal arch 1. There's other issues like breathing and feeding because all those things are coming from pharyngeal arch 1 and 2.
With the mandible, yeah.
Yeah. But it makes sense that they're having all those seemingly unrelated problems.
Because they're coming from the same place embryologically.
Exactly. So that's why the ear makes sense to also have breathing problems, you know, like, given the nature of it. So, but how difficult is it to try and memorize everything that could go wrong with Treacher Collins as opposed to just knowing pharyngeal arch 1 and 2, and these are my derivatives of arch 1 and 2?
Yeah. Wild. All right, everybody, that is episode 10, which was part 2 with respiration, what's in my bag, and part 2 with embryology. Hope you join us next week for episode 11. Thanks. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wu Ya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.